Thank you so much, Mike. That was beautiful. Good morning, everyone. My name is Beth Astarte, and welcome to Unity Center for Positive Living. Wherever you are on your faith journey, you are welcome here, and we're so glad you could join us. Be sure to come downstairs after the service for a delicious potluck. And now, if you would like, please stand up, join us in our welcoming song, and do not sit down, as we're going to take a moment to greet one another afterwards.
No, the song is
So now is our time for announcements. I would like to remind everyone that Circle America is next Sunday, March 30th, and they'll be discussing the movie The 6888 about a historic battalion of all female soldiers as they restore hope during World War II. And I found this fascinating, by delivering over 12 million backlogged mail. I had no idea anything was like that. It happened during World War II. So if you're interested, you might even watch the movie and then join the discussion next week. And then I'd like to, it was in our newsletter this week, but just remind everyone to save April 13th. We're going to be having a special membership meeting right after the service. So mark your calendars and plan to attend. Are there any other announcements? Eileen.
All right, so just real quick, I know that there's been some information flying and some people have gotten some things and some people haven't. Just an FYI, if you heard any reference to the board meeting today, that is kind of an invite-only thing while we kind of sift through all of the information that has come through in the last couple weeks and put it together to let you know in a more cohesive way what our options are and what we recommend going forward. So we are having a board meeting today. It will be in the boardroom and it is for the board and a few select invited members. Just an FYI.
Great, thank you, Eileen. Anybody else have any announcements? Great, so let's move forward with joining together as we say our unity statement. We believe in our oneness with all life and the power of love. We teach universal principles and values as taught by Jesus and others, revealing the one God presence. We practice prayer, meditation, and service to be conscious of our oneness in God. There is only one presence and one power, active as the universe and as my life. God the good. Let's join together in singing Surely the Presence, led by Mike and Karen.
Surely the presence of God's love is in this place. I can feel glory on each face. Surely the presence of God's love is in this place. Surely the presence of God's love is in this place. I can feel the mighty power and the grace.
I'm going to read from the Daily Word now, and I was delighted when I saw that the subject is joy today. So joy fills my heart and warms my soul. Today I will view the world through eyes of joy. This mindful practice will make even the most ordinary things seem special, and the things I may have taken for granted seem fresh and new. Even the energy I bring to my relationships will be imbued with harmony and peace. I will feel lighter, kinder, and more connected to the people in my life when I commit to living with joyful intention. Moments of frustration, disagreements with others, and disappointments may disturb my equilibrium for a time, but will not rob me of my joy. I honor God each time I share my joy as I bless myself by feeling joyful. I bring more love, more peace, and more happiness to the world. And from Psalms chapter 118, verse 24, this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So now is our time for our gratitude share, where we practice gratitude. If you have something you're especially thankful for this past week, feel free to share it with us briefly. Anyone have a gratitude? Eileen.
I continue to be exceedingly grateful for Beth and all of her efforts to help us with whatever transition it is that
we're in. Thank you, Eileen. So Eileen is grateful for me, but I want to point to God. I am so grateful the way God works. There has been so many wonderful things that have fallen into place this week, and I am so grateful for the way the Spirit moves and the Spirit works. It just, when the flow happens, it happens in these amazing, amazing ways when you're in it. And then the trick is not to kink your hose. Terry.
Yeah, God works in mysterious ways. I mean, there's not a day that God will do something for you. And a lot of times we don't realize that. And it's just until, boom, you know, like, hey, how did this happen? Why did this happen? Think about it. You know, think positive all the time. God will work no matter what.
Exactly, exactly. So Terry is grateful for the mysterious ways in which God works. And I'm grateful for the bald eagle I saw on the way into church today. It was just sitting in a field, and I had read probably a month ago now that an eagle was a sign that to not look at things as obstacles, but to fly above and see them as opportunities. So I was like, okay, I got it, God. We're looking at opportunities. Anybody else have something they're grateful for? All right, well, let's move into our song of joy, Rise As You'd Like, as Mike and Karen lead us in, I think it's Hallelujah, Hallelujah. Or is it something else?
It's Here in the Heart of God. Heart of God. And this is our own little adaptation, because I don't know how the original went. I just had some words, and then I added some words. So.
Oh,
much, Mike and Karen. So this is the time for our reading, and we didn't have anyone sign up, so I thought I would use it as an opportunity for us to delve into Unity's Lenten book, which is called In the Garden. So I'm going to read today's Lenten reading. It's called Jesus Honored His Calling by Reverend Ellen Devenport. One of the reasons people sometimes hesitate to ask for divine guidance is because they fear what they may be called to do. It could overturn their comfortable lives. Yet many of us have stories of first resisting an idea that turned out to be the exact right spiritual path. As we explore the story of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane on the night of his arrest, we hear him asking for guidance. My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not what I want, but what you want. In the first part of the prayer, Jesus expressed a reluctance by asking whether this was really his to do. It was an understandable human response to an unthinkable situation. Maybe he wouldn't have to go through what he saw coming. Yet in the same sentence, he immediately released any doubts or questioning and moved into surrender. Yet not what I want, but what you want. In Matthew, Jesus repeated this prayer three times. In Luke's version, Jesus was so distraught that his sweat became like great drops of blood falling on the ground. An angel appeared to give him strength. Jesus knew that under the oppressive Roman regime occupying Judea, his teachings seemed radical and were easily misunderstood. While his primary teaching was to love one another, it was interpreted by the authorities as rabble-rousing or blasphemy. Despite the danger, Jesus a few days earlier had ridden into Jerusalem on a donkey with his followers shouting hosannas and waving palm fronds. At the same time, on the other side of town, the Judean governor, Pontius Pilate, was entering Jerusalem in a military procession with pageantry fit for an empire, whose leader called himself the Son of God. Jesus didn't change his message. This was the week he overturned tables in the temple. In John, it was the week he raised Lazarus from the dead. He didn't hesitate to draw attention, teaching, attracting crowds, performing miracles, and letting the chips fall where they may. Jesus was carrying out what we can clearly see was his soul's purpose, but he didn't get to skip any of the human steps, and neither do we. Living a spiritual life does not exempt us from difficult experiences, including those that are unfair and painful. Jesus might have understood the spiritual reasons behind adversity more clearly than many of us in our most trying times, but we can trust that spiritual reasons exist. We see in Jesus's experience that none of us get to avoid human hardships, even when we know our oneness with the divine. There was no God in the sky willing Jesus into crucifixion. His reference to what you want meant the soul plan worked out for his life, the dangerous mission he had accepted on earth, his calling to live and teach in this place and time. His example for us is to accept our divine calling and play them out to the very end, trusting that our impact will be larger than ourselves. Yeah, that one takes a deep breath after it. So let's join together. Let's say our affirmations together. I am a joyous being of light. I am the love of God in expression. I am grateful for all that I am. I am one with the abundant nature of the universe. I am healthy, active, whole, and happy. I am at peace, knowing everything I need comes to me in the perfect time and in the perfect way. So every Sunday of the month, we have a different speaker. And this morning, it's my pleasure to introduce Eileen Selleck, who will continue the book, The Trip to Bethlehem. And as we've arrived in the Bethlehem and the birth is taking place, I look forward to seeing what else we're supposed to learn.
Yes, we are continuing on this trip. And yeah, we have made it to Bethlehem. How odd is it that we've made it to Bethlehem and yet we are still on this journey? And so I'm going to point out that the Christmas story actually doesn't end with the birth. There are some additional things that happen after the birth that complete the actual full Christmas story. So we are in stage 10. And so we are continuing with the trip to Bethlehem. The traditional Christmas story is a guide to spiritual transformation by Hypatia Hasbrouck. All right, so here's one of my favorite parts to talk about. Some foundations. All right. So Bible stories. Bible stories have three different levels of meaning, right? So we have the literal, we have the moral, and we have the metaphysical. All right. Literal. The words on the page are what they mean. Period. And end of story. The moral. We read those words and we interpret the moral of the story, right? So what the lesson is that's needing to be learned. And then the metaphysical. This is the fun part. This is where we read it and we absorb it and we translate that into a special message just for us, so that we have the meaning, that hidden meaning that is just ours. Our second foundation, this one's always fun. I feel like I gotta read this one every time. All right. In order for the Jesus story to be a myth, therefore untrue, we have to accept a few things. A committee of Jews fabricated a man to be the Messiah. Fabricated, made him up. They created a background for this man out of myths from the Romans, Egyptians, Greeks, Syrians, Hindus, Buddhists, and Chinese. Keeping in mind that they would not have actually encountered any of these cultures. We have to accept that they gave this made-up Messiah character traits that flew in the face of society, such as acceptance of women as equals, tolerance of non-Jews, friendship with sinners, and forgiveness of the Romans. And finally, we have to accept that these men portrayed themselves by choice badly, and that they knowingly risked their own lives, some suffering death while steadily proclaiming faith in their lie. So again, if we want to believe that the Jesus story is a myth, we have to accept all of those things as truth and fact. So I will leave it up to you to determine whether or not you believe those things to be true or false. For me, I choose to believe in the story of Christ. Truth, however, is more than mere fact. Truth is the invisible, eternal principles which underlie everything that appears in the outer world. We have to remember as we are on this journey that it is, in fact, a journey. All right? It is a very personal journey, and we are all in a constant state of moving along the path. And kind of going back and forth, because success is not a straight line from A to B. We constantly move forward, circle back, and move on throughout life. And so we need to accept that this is a process, and we need to accept wherever we are in it. In unity, we recognize the 12 powers of man, often referred to as faculties by Reverend Hasbrouck. And so these powers, we believe that when they're developed, that these powers or these faculties can lead to a life of unspeakable joy and glory. These powers, they correlate with specific parts of the body. They are also represented in the 12 months of the year, the 12 apostles of Christ, and by 12 colors. For example, for the month of March, when I looked it up, it said we light the yellow, yellow candle as a representation of the power of wisdom. All right, and that brings us to our actual journey. So here is our chance to reflect back on all of the stages that we have gone through so far on this journey. And so the first stage, so this is the power of renunciation. That's elimination. And this is the weakening of the egocentricity. In this stage of the journey, it's represented by King Herod. And King Herod, he represents the egocentric ego and a self-centered person. And so Herod is the only enemy of the newborn Christ, and the egocentric ego is the only enemy of our own inner Christ. So this stage, we need to be releasing those self-centered tendencies. And I think I say it time after time, that is probably the one that I circle back to, or at least the one that is most recognizable to me as that piece that I circle back through on my journey. Next, we have the power of wisdom. So the power of wisdom, this is represented by following the star in our story. And wisdom is the ability to discern the power, discern the best or the most godlike way to make use of knowledge and to judge on the basis of principle, righteously and impartially. And again, in our story, wisdom is represented by the three wise men following the star. It's the actual act of following the star, not necessarily the wise men themselves, but that act of following the star. All right, stage three, we have grace and understanding. Stage three starts the actual transformation of the consciousness by revealing our potential for embodying grace. Grace is the generous love and mercy of God that are always active. And grace is represented in our story by the unexpected blessing of Elizabeth and Zechariah's conception of their son John in their advanced age, after they had been deemed barren. So not only are they old, but they were deemed barren. All right. Next we have, I think my favorite image, and I think I say it every time, I love this particular image. We have imagination in stage four. In this stage of the trip, Bethlehem requires us to engage, trip to Bethlehem, requires us to engage our power of imagination. So imagination gives us the ability to mentally see or visualize what exists only in potential, what has not yet been expressed. The mind must be able to conceive of the idea of the Christ before it can become fully birthed within us. And so this stage centers around the Virgin Mary and when Gabriel visited her to tell her that she would bear the child of God, the Messiah, and his name would be Jesus. Faith is our fifth stage in our story, and this is our ability to believe and trust that God's will is for our highest good, even before the good has appeared in our lives. In this stage of our journey, faith is the idea of the Christ, and it becomes strong. Will is stage six. Will is the power to make choices. Choosing to seek God's will is most important to the process of transformation. In seeking God's will, we are ready to do whatever is required to allow the higher self to emerge and take its rightful place as the governing center of consciousness. In our story, this stage is represented by Joseph. In choosing to remain with Mary, he chooses to allow God's will to be done in and through him. If you're not aware, this past week we celebrated St. Joseph with his feast day. So we got to talk a bit about Joseph. Did you know that Joseph never actually speaks in the Bible? There are no quotations of Joseph in the Bible. There are just references to him. Just, you know, little tidbit. All right, let's see. Da, da, da. Stage seven. All right, stage seven, we have strength. So this newly emerged inner Christ is fragile, requiring conscious commitment to nurture it. In this fragile state, the Christ needs to be protected. So it's laid in a manger. So this was the actual birth of Christ, right? All right, so he's laid in a manger. He's wrapped in swaddling clothes. So he's protected and restrained. So that the strength of its infinite potentialities is focused within the individual psyche. Not just released on the world, but protected and kept restrained so that it can grow. Commitment to the nurturing of the Christ within requires persistence, patience, endurance, firm purpose, and stability, all aspects of the faculty of strength. which are enhanced when the Christ comes alive in the consciousness. Next, we have love in stage 8, and that this, the Christ has been born, love has been born in us, and that's true love, spiritual love, divine love. Stage 8 illustrates the attracting, harmonizing force of divine love, the very nature of God represented by the Christ child. This divine love is also the principle of oneness, as God is the only presence and power. All right, last time we spoke, we talked about order. And at this point in our story, we see Joseph and Mary following the Jewish traditions of circumcision, purification rites, sacrifice, and dedicating the child to Jesus, all in the proper order. Stage 9 illustrates the proper sequence of inner events following the emergence of the Christ. And this expression of the faculty of order gives service to God first priority in our lives. And friends, that brings us to power. All right, so the power of power. Now I'm gonna say it. Anybody ever watched the movie Powder? Am I the only one? I know Tom and I have talked about it, all right? So the movie Powder, if you're not familiar, it's a gentleman, you know, it's a boy and he's born, I believe the night he's born, lightning strikes the house, it's this whole thing. And he grows up very different from the other kids. He sees the world differently. He's just very different. And there's like a scene in the movie where one of the other boys shoots a deer and he touches the deer and he touches the boy, and then the boy experiences everything that the deer is experiencing in that moment of its death. But what I loved about Powder and what really kind of made me go, whoa, was at the end. All right, I'm gonna spoil it for you. All right, those of you that have not seen it, I'm gonna spoil it for you. All right, so you have this scene at the end of Powder where he runs out into a thunderstorm. And he throws his arms wide, he's hit by lightning, and he disappears. And it was in that moment, and I was, I don't even know how old, it was a long time ago, it occurred to me that we are so much more than our physical bodies. That was the moment in this obscure movie that now 20, 30 years later, nobody really remembers. That was the moment that it occurred to me that we are more than our physical bodies. That's just a side note to our trip to Bethlehem, but this image always makes me think of that. And you know, this is the power of power is our talk today. We've gone through all this other stuff. Let's get into it. All right, so stage 10 is power. So our portion of the story, this is where we are in the story. The family returns to the house in Bethlehem. So remember, this is after we've gone through that proper sequence, that proper order of events, right? So the family returns to the house in Bethlehem, and soon three magi from the east ride camels into Jerusalem. Believing the star is leading them to the newborn king of the Jews, they go to the seat of government to ask where he is. Herod feels threatened when he hears about the wise men's quest. He asks the priests and scribes where the expected king was to be born, and they say in Bethlehem. Herod summons the wise men, finds out when they first saw the star, and sends them to Bethlehem, telling them to return to tell him where to find the child so that he may pay his respects. Bum, bum, bum. We will continue this story next week. All right, so the star leads the Magi to the house of Joseph. We're actually going to continue right now. And they enter, bow to worship the child, and give their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. That night, they are warned in a dream not to go back to Herod. They go home by another route. Now let's try this again. Bum, bum, bum. To be continued next week. All right, so at this stage, the mental faculty of power enhances all the other faculties with an infusion of spiritual energy that protects us from error. Thought that was an interesting line. So there's so much symbolism in this part of the story. So do your best to follow along. Okay, here we go. The Magi from the east, riding camels into Jerusalem, represents our accumulated spiritual wisdom, searching for the Christ in peace of mind. Okay? So, just to break that down, spiritual wisdom is the Magi, right? And they are searching for the Christ in Jerusalem, which is peace of mind. Okay? And so that is where they would expect to find him, is in Jerusalem. But that's not where they find him. So, although peace of mind, also known as Jerusalem, is a high state of consciousness, it is not as high as the consciousness of omnipresent substance, also known as Bethlehem. All right? Okay, so Herod, the egocentric ego. I know Danny's like, whoa, okay, we're done. All right. So Herod, the egocentric ego, can abide in peace of mind, but fears the Christ. Okay? So he can abide in Jerusalem, but he can't get to Bethlehem. Spiritual wisdom's search for the Christ threatens the inner Herod, and spiritual wisdom continues to search following the star. So arriving in Bethlehem, the consciousness of omnipresent substance. Spiritual wisdom recognizes and enters the consciousness in which the masculine and feminine natures have achieved perfect harmony and are serving the higher self. All right. So we have entered the home of Joseph and Mary with the Christ child, where the masculine and the feminine